Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Tuesday, the 22nd of April, recording at 9:24 p.m. That's British Summer Time. Now, first the highlights on the day. Asian stock markets were mostly steadier. I think they were all steadier, or the vast majority of them steadier, not least in China, with the H shares doing quite well. Hang Seng not doing badly. They weren't all up. I see Japan was down a little bit, and Australia also was down a little bit. Thailand was up. India was up. Now, China's A shares were up, but only by a small margin. In Europe, we had some seesawing activity here, and then the indices were dragged lower as Wall Street weakened. Towards the close, ostensibly on earnings, but Wall Street's had a pretty good run recently and is up near the higher side of its range. So on a very, very short-term basis, you could say Wall Street is slightly overbought and in need of a little bit of consolidation. But at any rate, we had the Dow fall at one stage down about 165 points. It's closed at 104. Down 0.82%, so not a problem. If it ranges here, this would be no problem technically. There are some headwinds though, which I'll cover in a moment. Now, carrying on with the review though, the long-dated government bonds were mostly a bit easier, although they were. The 30-year Treasury bond futures were up slightly, the 10-year flat. In terms of precious metals, these seesawed a bit, but with the dollar a bit easier in here today, not least against the euro, which hit a new all-time high, got up to 1.6018. It's currently trading a little below that at 1.5982. But so the soft dollar and precious metals closed out mostly with gains in here today in some fairly volatile, choppy action. But the big gainer here was crude oil, which has been hitting new highs practically every day. Got up to 118.98 and currently at 118.25. That's up $1.62. More on that in a moment. I see gasoline up near the $3 level, just above the $3 level as well. And in the industrial metals, they were all higher. Copper probing that all-time high, holding this range so far. And we had fairly strong performance by the grain and bean complex today. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, confidence is gradually returning to global stock markets. Does this mean that the credit crisis is over? And I should say credit crisis such as it is, because it's localized, albeit in a big geographic area. And that includes the United States, Europe. It spilled over into Australia and some other regions, but it is not a global wide problem. For instance, there are all sorts of banks in countries around the world where we see very high growth rates. It had absolutely nothing to do with the U.S. Derivatives contract implosion. In terms of credit complex credit instruments. Incidentally, I've got a terrific article on that from the New York Times, which I've posted today. I know that's an old story, but it's an interesting one, and it's one that you want to, I think, fully, that we all want to fully understand. I do at least, even though I may have to live another 40 years to see that problem come around again. Although there'll be plenty of other banking crises before then. They occur roughly every 10 to 12 years, as I've mentioned before. Now, as far as stock markets are concerned, we don't have to have a rip-roaring banking sector, although that's always good for stock markets generally. But obviously, for animal spirits to return to stock markets, we do not want people quaking in fear of another huge downdraft on the part of the U.S. financial sector. Now, I don't think that will happen. I don't think we will get that big shock and extended move. There's always a possibility, quite a high risk, that individual banks retest their lows and maybe drift a little bit lower. And why? Well, because what we're seeing, and this will also affect some of the UK banks, not least perhaps RBS, Royal Bank of Scotland, where I have my, where I do my personal banking. They're going to have a huge rights issue. They're going to raise billions, and so that causes investors to back away, and also the existing shareholders are going to suffer some dilution. So when I've said, as I have for a number of months, that while I felt that banks had certainly seen the worst of the sell-off and that banks had probably commenced had almost certainly commenced a bottoming out process, a support building process, I have emphasized almost daily the long convalescence, the very long convalescence, and it would be only the very strong banks that do not have to go through these extensive capital raising exercises that would not have those long convalescences. So, in other words, if you want an example of a really strong financial sector, look at Taiwan. It doesn't have the subprime slime. The political breakthrough with China is hugely important, and they're doing exceptionally well. But to get back to these Western banks, we know, investors I think know, that over a period of a good many more months, that we will see these capital raising exercises. As I mentioned before, there will be a dilution of shareholders, existing shareholders' interests, and the actual process of rebuilding the balance sheets. Also, this is being done through the yield curve, as I've mentioned before. That's a positive development. But it's not exciting in terms of investment prospects. There's also the very real probability that we will see more dividend cuts. And these couple of the dividend hikes that we saw earlier this year really showed a bit of cheek, and that's probably not. That was probably those were probably not good decisions. Almost certainly, those were not good decisions under the circumstances. The banks need to be, as I say, rebuilding those balance sheets. But as I said, well, not exciting in terms of investment prospects. It is good for the banks on a long-term basis. Now, some investors are trading those, and I think that's okay, but I've said that it should be done, or they're nibbling in the sector. Again, I've said that's okay, but it should be treated as a baby steps operation. You can read my articles on baby steps, new subscribers, if you haven't heard that term or seen the articles and are interested, they're in the forum. But the premise basically is that you nibble on weakness when the banks are being hammered. And you lighten a bit when they get the better rallies. That's a strategy I've advocated for this sector, where you know that the fundamentals are gradually improving, but they're probably not going to go. The price share prices probably aren't going to do more than range for quite some time, and after they build nice big base formations, those patterns will sustain some decent recoveries, but they're far more interesting sectors of markets. What might those be? Well, you see, the fashion for things continues, and not least among industrial miners. So most of those hit new highs in here again today. I'm very, very happy to be overweight in that sector. I'm not paying up for them at these levels. I don't pay up for them, but I did buy them in the teeth of the panic back in January. I bought, increased my positions on a leveraged basis, and then took profits as those rallied back up, while holding on to my core long-term holdings in that sector. That's the way I'm playing it now. So I'm very happy to hold those. But a key point here: if Wall Street continues to hold above its January and March lows, and actually, if Wall Street can avoid a retest of those lows, and I would give that prospect the benefit of the doubt until proved otherwise. If Wall Street can hold reasonably steady near its February highs, for instance, range there for a while, and then edge a bit higher once again, that will help to allay fears by investors generally around the world who have been sort of enthralled to the drama that was unfolding on Wall Street, and looking at the appalling sort of own goals, self-inflicted wounds, whatever you want to call it, from the banking sector. Now, China is awfully important in all this, and I do maintain that China's government is in a very gradual baby steps manner interested in slowing the decline, and prior to reversing the decline of that stock market setback with the index down 50% off its high, China becomes automatically interesting once again. It's not the cheapest market in the world, but it's the best, fastest growing economy, and I don't think that's going to change. And there's good value in the H shares, and also in the HSI shares. And Yang Liu, I'm posting an interview, Financial Times interview with Yang Liu, who's chairman of the Atlantis China division. And she's very interesting on this subject. She is investing in some pre-IPO positions, and was saying that previously she'd done this sort of a couple of years ago, that she would be having to pay a pre-IPO P of between 5 and 10%. I beg your pardon. Yes, 5 to 10. P of 5 to 10. Whereas she says today, because of the setback and the less ebullient environment, she's able to buy these at 3 to 5 times earnings. I think this is a smart woman who knows her job, and this is a good time to be moving into that market. So I'm very, very happy to hold on to my China Fortune Fund position, although I wish that I had sold it back in October when it was at its all-time high. But I didn't. The last thing I'm going to think about is selling it down here. That's foolish. If I ever sell that fund, I can promise you it will be on strength, not weakness. So again, I think China is important for two reasons. I think it's an important investment opportunity right now. And also, I've referred to the China leash on a number of occasions. And you have heard me talk more about the Wall Street leash, which is still the biggest influence. And that's moving slowly from being an out-and-out negative to neutral, and even occasionally neutral positive. The China leash has been very negative recently. That doesn't have the same global implications of the Wall Street leash, but it certainly has a big influence in the Asian region generally. Now, Asia is where we get some of the best growth. And my feeling is that as China bottoms out, and I think we'll see that with the Shanghai A Share Index and the Shanghai Composite Index finding support near the 3,000 level and bottoming out and breaking the downward trend. Now, as that happens, that will give a boost to the Asian markets, which are going to lead the next upside. And two of them that I think will be leading the upside, well, one for sure, is going to be Taiwan. And I've described the political thaw between Taiwan and the mainland as that's a seminal event. And it is fundamentally hugely, hugely significant. And Taiwan also will benefit from the recovering interest in technology stocks that I've mentioned before. But the big one, as I say, is the political thaw with China following the presidential election in Hong Kong. Now, India had a big pullback, as did many of the Asian markets. It's really quite steady in here now. I'm optimistic that I will see those India and Chinese investment positions that I hold in my long-term personal account. Those are my two biggest positions overall. I would certainly expect them to hit new all-time highs at some stage next year, if not sooner. So, in other words, I think that the second half of this year will be better than the first half of this year. But we're not going to go back to any kind of Goldilocks environment. There are big headwinds, crude oil. But a lot depends on the speed with which crude oil moves up. If there are supply disruptions and problems in Nigeria help to push prices up in here today. But if oil were to spike, that would be a body blow for stock markets generally. But if oil is moving upwards on a more gradual basis, it's not going to be anywhere near the same problem, but it is a headwind. The food price inflation is another headwind because it's causing some central banks. There are now rumors that the ECB will raise rates. I'm not at all sure that that's justified, but certainly we can say that the food price inflation is preventing some central banks from lowering rates as much as they would wish to. That would apply to the Bank of England, it would apply to the Fed, it would apply to the central bank in China, and well, just a good many other countries around the globe, India. So that most definitely is a headwind. That was not a problem in 2003 or 2005. So resources are going to be a headwind for other sections of stock markets. But that's hardly the end of the world. And there are tailwinds. There were among the tailwinds are, of course, the huge amount of liquidity that's been thrown into the global economy, and some of that liquidity is certainly going to find its way into the better performing stock markets. I mentioned among the Asian ones, I also think Taiwan, well, no, sorry, I already mentioned Taiwan, I think Thailand, the T's, they will do well. Remember, Thailand is the world's biggest exporter of rice, and you know what rice has done recently. So My point is here that even in just a neutral Wall Street environment, which would represent a big positive change in terms of overall sentiment, and if China picks up, I think you'll see, or as China picks up, it's not if China picks up, as China picks up, I think we will see a number of those Asian stock market indices pushing up to new all-time highs. Middle Eastern stock markets are still really quite strong. There is an interesting article. Where did I read this? I think in the Herald Tribune and today, just saying that some of these sovereign wealth funds were sitting on their cash. They were a little bit cautious having run in and bought Citibank and UBS and so on too soon. Well, the important point there is that the cash levels are just growing and growing. And they're no smarter than any other investors, perhaps less so in some instances. I don't mean to be rude about them or to malign them, but they do have a great deal of cash. That cash, I do not feel, is going to go into US government bonds, which Tim Price described so wittily and I feel accurately yesterday as certificates of confiscation. And I don't like those. I don't like the long-dated government bonds, as you probably realize. So I think a lot of that money will go into equity. Some of it will go into property as well in the growth regions. But property is not regarded as the same one-way street that people felt it was prior to the US housing meltdown and some housing setbacks in other countries that were also seen. So despite the headwind in terms of inflation from resources prices, and then of course there's the recession problems from the consumer discretionary sectors of the US economy and others that pose a threat to corporate profits. Nevertheless, this is an environment where stock markets are gradually improving, and I think that trend will continue overall. And there's a lot of good value around. I don't want to go on too long. This audio is getting pretty long. What else to mention here? Precious metals. I think they're going to range for a while longer. I do feel this is a medium-term corrective phase overall. We probably don't get as big a downward reaction as we saw in 2006 because, well, first, gold didn't accelerate all that much. Platinum did, but it was a little bit of a special situation. And I think people are more interested in the gold story generally at these levels. And so this is just a healthy consolidation, but it could take a number of months. So thus I've been quiet in that sector, unusually for me, because I was playing the futures pretty aggressively for this, particularly during that August onward period until a couple of months ago. And I think that's pretty much it. Well, I just wanted to say on crude oil, though, Owen and I were talking about that earlier today, and I just, and you know, we looked at this coming up towards the 120 level, and he said, psychological resistance there, and I agree, and I said I would be astonished if crude oil moved above the 120, $125 level without some sort of little reaction occurring. I don't think we're going to get any big downward move. This is a secular bull market, and it reasserted itself not all that long ago, and I think the prices for virtually all of these resources are going to move higher. In industrial metals, tin, incidentally, is the runaway leader at this stage, but copper's pretty steady up near its highs, as you know, Aluminium has been quite firm. The only commodity in the doghouse in my bargain hunting has done me no favors. I've only lost money in it so far this year, and that's lumber, which was not out of the woods yet. And I'd better end on that note and say all the best to all of you.